I suppose that if I had decided to give something different, the cover of the bulletin would have locked me down. To be sure, as you see, it has, "Here Comes the Judge, Part 7. And that is indeed what we shall do today. Part 7, Chapter 7 of the Book of Daniel. By now, and I'm surprised I haven't gotten any responses yet, because I have said some things like, the Book of Daniel is really not about prophecy. It contains prophecy, but that's not what the book is about. I have said that the book of Daniel, Daniel was not a prophet in the true sense of the word. God did not give him a "Thus saith the Lord." But in the totality of Daniel's life, he reveals a humility to God and a reliance upon God that is startling. Not only he, but his three Hebrew buddies exercise great faith in the Creator in the midst of unbelievable odds. So as we worked our way through the first six chapters, which are in chronological order, we come to the seventh chapter that is not, nor the remaining chapters in chronological order. They are recordings of Daniel, of the visions he obtained or had through the course of the rulership of the various kings in the Babylonian Empire as well as the Medo-Persian Empire. That is very interesting, I think. And the seventh chapter is the first one that comes somewhat out of order. It's identified in the first verse that this vision or dream that Daniel has comes in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. I remind you that Belshazzar was the son of Nabonidus and the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. You could not know that from the book of Daniel. You'd have to go to the book of Jeremiah and realize that there was an intervening individual from Nebuchadnezzar to Belshazzar. These Babylonian names sound so difficult on our ears, but I suppose if somebody were to be resurrected from Babylon and hear some of our names, and they'd say, "Billy Bob, what is that?" I mean, what kind of name is that? But you know what I mean. So names are relative. In the case of Daniel, I told you that the name Daniel means God judges, or God is my judge. And the whole overall theme of the book is that there is a judge coming. The coming of judgment upon the earth, upon the kingdoms of this world. And it's interesting that Daniel was placed on the scene of the first great world ruling empire called Babylon. Now, prior to Babylon, there had been an Assyrian kingdom. There had been an Egyptian kingdom. Israel got caught up in the Egyptian kingdom, if you will, and as a result, they endured a great imprisonment or enslavement for 400 years. The Egyptian kingdom was significant, as you can learn from Egyptology and the movies that have been made about that period of time. I recommend to you The Prince of Egypt to see that, to get a sense of that realm of that time when Moses was on the scene and how expansive that kingdom really was. But never had there been a world ruling empire like the Babylonian Empire. Belshazzar was the last ruler in that kingdom before it was destroyed. And now this vision comes to Daniel in the seventh chapter, but it happened in the first year of Belshazzar, who didn't reign a long time, I think maybe 3 or 4 years at the most, before his kingdom came to an end. In fact, at this time, Belshazzar was co-regent or co-leader, co-king, if you will, with his father, Nabonidus, who had kind of gone into retirement. And so that ascension or transition period was in vogue. Now, let us get into the book, the chapter here. Daniel spoke and said, I saw, well, first of all, let me read the rest of verse 1. He wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. This dream that we're about to decipher here was one that Daniel had. He wrote it down. And then verse 2 says, Daniel spake and said, now, please understand, was he telling the story to someone, or is this a metaphor for the words that he wrote speaking? Are you with me? That people write words, and those words speak. Not literally speak, but they have a voice. They say something to us. So perhaps that is what more is intended here, that Daniel spoke through his writings. And we're about to read his writing now. He says, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. Anybody been in a tornado? Well, you know what tornadoes can do. On the water, I think they're called cyclones. You know, where the wind is so ferocious. Or typhoon. Those kinds of things. So vicious and so powerful are those winds in the presence of water. And sometimes we call them hurricanes, but hurricane is kind of low grade speed wise when you get into cyclones and typhoons, and certainly with tornadoes. But the wind was vicious enough to bring about the presentation in verse 3 of four great beasts. They came up from the sea, diverse, different one from another. Now, a lot has been said about the four beasts of this book, because the book of Revelation talks about beasts, and everybody wants to know about beasts. Who's the beast? Yeah, we know who the beast is, and everybody's got an opinion about it. Now, one of the things that this vision has is a parallel that appears in chapter 2. We'll see in a moment. But the parallel between Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 is striking. It's almost as if God confirmed what he gave Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2. I didn't spend a lot of time in the second installment of this on the colossus, that image that Nebuchadnezzar saw. The head of gold, the chest and arms of silver, the torso and thighs of brass, and then the legs and the feet of iron, and iron mixed with clay. Didn't spend a lot of time there because I knew Daniel 7 was coming, and we could make the parallel between those two. Now bear in mind as we go through this that the objective is not to be so precise about what these things mean. Can we tell what nation it's for? And can we understand ultimately who these ten horns are precisely, and what the last horn is supposed to do and when it is supposed to appear? Many people spend a lot of time trying to figure that out and miss the point of Daniel. I hope that we won't do that today. So these four beasts appear. The first one in verse 4 is like a lion. Verse 5, the second one is like a bear. Verse 6, it's like a leopard. And then in verse 7, the fourth beast is not given a designation of a particular animal. It just says it's a beast that is more terrible and dreadful and exceedingly strong. Many suggest that the fourth beast has a combination of the strongest qualities of the previous three beasts. That is possible. But in artist depictions, have you seen any artist depictions of these beasts? You probably have, and the fourth one is the hardest one to draw. Usually it'll always have the ten horns, and then a little horn somewhere in there, but what beast is it like? Does it look like a lion? Does it look like a leopard? Does it look like a bear, or does it have some combination thereof? Artists have a great time going through trying to figure out this fourth beast. Now, there are some things mentioned in the presentation of these four beasts that we mustn't overlook. In verse 4, by the way, and I'm going to say to you that as I assign the world ruling empires to these, this has been done in retrospection. We stand in a place where Daniel could not stand. Daniel lived through the end of the Babylonian Empire and the beginning of the Medes and the Persians, or the Medo-Persian Empire, world-ruling empire. he did not live to see the Greco-Macedonian Empire, nor the Roman Empire. But in retrospection, historians and Bible scholars have assigned, as a right of viewing and seeing how the world has developed over time, and one of the things in your schooling and my schooling is we always wondered, what is the importance of going through history? Oh, this is so boring. It's irrelevant. How is this going to help me get a good job? So we don't pay very much attention to history. Am I seeing some smiles on people's faces? Because that's been the attitude. But if you had paid better attention in history, the book of Daniel would be clearer. So we wrestle with it. And so somebody comes along and tells us something. Well, that sounds reasonable, but you don't know because you hadn't studied it. Well, verse 4 has an application to the Babylonian Empire. It was a kingdom like a lion that had eagle's wings, and I beheld to the wings thereof were plucked. Daniel is seeing this vision. Well, he did see it plucked, but it hadn't happened yet. This is in the first year of Belshazzar. At the end of Belshazzar's reign, when the Babylonian Empire falls, he will see the wings plucked. And it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. The interpretation of that is that this has an application to Nebuchadnezzar. Remember he had the 7 years when he was like a wild animal, a beast, out munching grass while the kingdom went on. But a heart, a man's heart was given to it. That is, he was not a beast anymore. After the 7 years, when you read in this book, in the end of the fourth chapter of Daniel, what Nebuchadnezzar has to say, it is a transformation of a man who was beast-like. He could kill you at the drop of a hat. He didn't blink an eye when he says, throw those three Hebrew boys in that fiery furnace. It didn't cause him to lose 1 ounce of sleep. And there are world rulers like that. One has just been indicted, named Milosevic. There are people like that in the world. So when beast qualities are given as synonymous with these kingdoms, in the second chapter we have gold, silver, and all these precious things which are beautiful. They are enticing, and they are kind of emblematic of the socio-economic, military power, so to speak, of those four images, or the one image of the Colossus that have these gradations of precious material. But now we're going to get what it's really like on the inside, the beast quality, the animalistic quality of these particular reigns. And Babylon certainly fits in that category. In verse 5, then, we're introduced to the kingdom that was to come after. Behold, another beast, a second, like a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth of it. I've seen pictures of this depiction. What about you? And so there's a speculation about what do the three ribs mean? Is it a reference to three kings or something like that? Well, the Bible does not interpret it that way, so it's left for us to try to decipher. Later in the book of Daniel, we find a prophecy concerning the fall of Persia, that there would be three kings, and the fourth king would come along and would preside over the destruction of the Persian Empire. But maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe it doesn't. It's just interesting that a bear is not a cuddly teddy bear. It's vicious, and you don't want to mess with a bear. Now, is this referring to the Russian Empire? No, not at all, because the Russian Empire was certainly nothing in comparison to the Medo-Persian Empire that this is symbolic of. It's given instruction. It says to arise and devour much flesh. Verse 6, then, gives us the Greco-Macedonian Empire, which Daniel did not live through, but he had to see it in vision. And it's likened to a leopard, and one of the things, the characteristics of a leopard is that it's very quick, it's fast, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl, and the beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. We know from history that Alexander the Great conquered the known world, sat down at the age of 31, and wept because there was nothing else to conquer. And when he died, upon his death, the kingdom, the Greco-Macedonian Empire, was divided into four parts. We know that from history. And it was given to his four top generals. That is something that we can learn from history and then apply to this verse. Then comes verse 7, the Roman Empire, which Daniel did not experience, but he saw in this vision. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was divorced from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Well, this is an interesting description. But we know from history that the Roman Empire lived or reigned for approximately 1,000 years. And America has been around 200, a little more than that. To put it in perspective, 1,000 years. I mean, a whole lot of people lived and died. A lot of emperors came and went. A lot of palace intrigue over that 1,000 years to its ultimate decline. A great series of books, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire by Gibbons, is a massive work, but you find some interesting parallels between maybe what's going on in America today. But for now, let's just consider the Roman Empire, that it was diverse, it was dreadful, it was terrible, and it had these 10 horns. Verse 8 continues and tells us that, I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots, and behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of man, and a mouth speaking great things. Historically, people recognize that this has something to do with a man named Charlemagne, who lived around 800 A.D. I remember when I was taking French, the way that you should correctly pronounce it is Charlemagne, like champagne. We say champagne. Champagne is the French, and Charlemagne is the correct pronunciation for Charlemagne. But Charlemagne was a bad dude, to put it in the vernacular. He brought together the Roman Empire in a way that had not happened. There had been 3 kings who were pretenders to the throne, but he came along and put it all together, which included a large region of Europe. Following him, we would have the Habsburgs and the Ottomans. Otto the Great was his name, and you know, I remember hearing these people's names in history, and it was just really irrelevant until I began to realize that the Bible had prophesied not them by name, but their kingdoms would manifest themselves on the earth. And so, as you go through history and recognize that, even knowing that Napoleon attempted a revival of the Roman Empire. Not only Napoleon, but Mussolini and Hitler, both in their Axis power, attempted to do that. What did Hitler call his operation? The Third Reich. The Third Reign. He wanted to have this millennial... He said, if the Germans take over, we'll have this millennial reign. That was his point. And we understand it better when we understand that the prophetic utterance that Daniel was given, not as a word from the Lord, but as a vision which he saw and recorded, and we can discern it, we can look at it, and we can try to figure out what's going on. I pause here after I've said all of that to ask you these questions. What if I could tell you, or you could know clearly, who would comprise the last revival of the Roman Empire? What if I could tell you that? Or what if you could know that? My question then really is, what difference would it make if it brought no humility? What difference? Or if it engendered fear rather than faith? Or if it repelled rather than brought repentance? What difference would it make? Let me illustrate. Belshazzar saw the handwriting on the wall, right? Daniel came to him and gave him the interpretation of it. Your kingdom has been weighed in the balance and found wanting. What if Belshazzar had repented? What if he had fallen on his face before the Almighty God and says, now I see what my granddaddy was trying to tell me? What if that had happened? Remember, Nineveh had a message brought to it, and it repented from the king down. God withheld the destruction. My point is this. You could know precisely and concisely just what may happen. And you can propound it and expound it and say, I know, and you don't, and not have humility, and it won't amount to anything for you. Let me turn right at this moment to 1 Corinthians 13 so that we understand what Paul was trying to say in the course of a presentation to a church that had lots of knowledge. The Corinthian church was profound in its knowledge and its gifts that God had given to it. Chapter 12 is all about gifts. But Paul is saying, besides all of those gifts, here's something you must have. But in verse 2, he says this, chapter 13 and verse 2, and though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries. Who's the beast? What's the mark of the beast? What are the four beasts that come and make its presentation in the book of Daniel? And who the last revival of the Roman Empire is? Understanding all mysteries, it says, and have all knowledge. And though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains. And there are some preachers around like that. Oh, yes. They have a lot of faith. It goes on to say, and have not charity, I am nothing. Now, there are a lot of people who don't believe that. They say, I have faith, I have knowledge, I have prophecy, and therefore I am something. Contradicting what this word says from the Lord. It says you are nothing. Now, I drop that in the midst of this so that we don't get so caught up in the discerning of, you know, well now, who is this in history and who is that and so forth. The next verses will help explain it. Verses 9 through 14. Here is what you can know for sure. When trying to figure out about these beasts, and we have the agent of history to help us through the world ruling empires, the four world ruling empires. This is what you would understand basically from world history when you would take it, even though they will mention things like the Chaldean Empire, the Assyrian Empire, the Egyptian Empire. All those empires existed, to be sure, and there was an Israelitish empire too. Really was. The glory days of David and Solomon, where everybody around came to their kingdom, to Jerusalem, to see what they were all about. Now, they were not conquerors in the sense of the Romans or the Greeks and that kind of thing, but there are four basic world ruling empires that were significant. Now, in verses 9 through 14, we find out what is for sure. And because you know this, the rest can be left in God's hands. Remember Daniel didn't run and hide to seek to protect himself with Nebuchadnezzar or seek to protect himself with Belshazzar. He just didn't do it. He told them what they needed to know, and he survived. You understand that the night that he read the handwriting on the wall was the night that the Babylonian Empire fell. And where did Daniel hide? He wasn't running around, you know, the sky's falling, flee from the wrath to come. He didn't do any of that. And he survived and found favor in the eyes of Darius the Mede, who came in as the conqueror of the Babylonian Empire, and then extended his favor with Cyrus the Persian. But here's what we should know. God protected Daniel because God is the judge. Look at verse 9. I beheld till thrones were cast down. The thrones are representative of rulership. And the thrones that's referred to here are the four beasts that preceded it. We'll see that here in a moment. But this is these are the thrones that were cast down. And what happens? The Ancient of Days did sit. Ancient of Days? What an interesting phrase. Whose garment was white as snow, whose hair of his head were like pure wool, his throne was like the fiery flame and his wheels as burning fire. Wow, what a description. Sounds like what Ezekiel saw. You know, the wheel in the middle of a wheel and the magnificence of such a vision as that. This kind of sounds like what Isaiah saw. What we learn from this is that there was a presentation in the Old Testament of the one we know of as the Father. And he's called the Ancient of Days, which means there is no time limit on him. There's no counting a beginning for him. He is Ancient of Days. He is not contained by time. And so he makes his presence, presentation in the midst of this dream that Daniel is seeing, this vision that he is seeing. Verse 10, a fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. So you believe there's a hell, huh? Is that what you think? You think hell is a place? Oh no, contraire. It's not a place. Because there is a heated core of the earth from which lava flows, there's an assumption by the great Milton of England, John Milton, who wrote Paradise Lost, and from which Dante Alighieri gets his notion of hell and all those kinds of things. These are fantasies of writers. God has flowing from him the ability in flame to destroy anything. It's wherever he is. Hell is not a place. It's a happening. It's a happening. So this fiery stream issues, as you will see here, comes forth from before him. Thousands, thousands minister unto him. This is speaking of the angelic host, which we have a description in Revelation 4 and 5. And 10,000s times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set. Uh-oh. Here comes the judge. There's a judgment about to happen here. And the books were open. Oh, Book of Revelation has something about that, doesn't it? Yes, back I think in Revelation 19:20, somewhere in there. Let me just check my margin. Revelation 20 and verse 12 about the books being open. So you can draw that connection between this description by Daniel, who lived approximately 600 years before Christ. In verse 11 he says, I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, in the midst of the presentation of the Ancient of Days, and his powerful agents of thousands upon thousands, the horn speaks. Sort of like E.F. Hutton, I guess. When the horn speaks, everybody listens. Okay, let's see what he has to say. I beheld even to the beast, the fourth beast, was slain, and his body destroyed, and given to the burning flame. Who's the beast? You know what? I don't care. Because I know that he will be destroyed. You see what's important to know? Who's the beast? We got to watch out for that nation. Well, no, but what about that nation? What about that group? Well, it's kind of shifting. We're talking about China today when we used to talk about Germany. Now, what is it going to be? Who should we be afraid of? Is there some other agent out there that God may be working with? You know what? God's going to take care of it. That's what's important to know. Let's read on to make sure we understand that. Because I can hear somebody saying, well, you got to know this. You got to watch this. Oh, really? See what Daniel was looking at. He says, and concerning the rest of the beasts that had their dominion taken away, the previous three beasts, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and time. This is a way of saying they had a short time compared to this fourth beast. As I said, it had a 1,000-year reign, the Roman Empire. And I saw in verse 13 of the night visions, behold, oh, this is interesting, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven. Isn't that what Thessalonians says? Isn't that what 1 Corinthians 15 says about the Son of Man, Jesus Christ, returning to the earth in the clouds at the last trump? I believe so. But notice, it's in relationship of something, and came, the Son of Man came to the Ancient of Days. And they, brought him near before him. Boy, that's a great description of the book of Revelation of the Lamb of God being brought. Who's worthy to open the book? Isn't that what it reads there? Well, that's Jesus Christ, the Son of Man, the Lamb of God, who is brought to the Ancient of Days, the Father. Wow, some judging going on here. Let's see what we got. Verse 14, and there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations, languages should serve him. Isn't that what Paul wrote? Every knee shall bow, every tongue shall confess that he is Lord. It's going to happen. It doesn't matter who the beast is, because the beast will be destroyed. And for those of us who are in the company of the Son of Man, before the company of the Father, we have promises. It says here, they shall pass away, and this kingdom shall not pass away, this dominion will not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. That is exactly what the image, the Colossus in chapter 2, all this magnificent image, a little stone comes and hits it on the feet and crumbles the statue, and the little stone goes into a great mountain, and Daniel said to Nebuchadnezzar, this kingdom will never be diminished. That's what Daniel 2 says. Nebuchadnezzar had that witness, and now Belshazzar has that witness through this dream that's given to Daniel. Well, just pause here for a moment, because Daniel, perhaps like some of you, was troubled by what he saw. But he was also assured. In verse 15 it says, I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near. I mean, people, they are troubled, and they look around, and they kind of figure out, well, the Chinese have stolen all of this technology, and will they attack us, or... And what about the Russians? Will somebody escape from over there with a suitcase bomb or an atomic weapon and come into our midst? And we worry about these things. And we worry about the euro. We worry about all kinds of things that we need not worry about. Because if we are in the care of the Ancient of Days, we have nothing to fear. Look at what it says. Daniel's trouble, verse 16. I came near unto one of them. Who is one of them? Well, one of those thousands ministering to the Ancient of Days. He came near to one of them, and he said, which stood by, and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things. Verse 17. Here is how we can know some things, because the Bible interprets the Bible. These great beasts, which are four kings which shall rise out of the earth, kingdoms, if you will. But verse 18, here's the beautiful assurance that Daniel is given. It says, but the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom. Well, that's the rest of the story. And it's interesting that the term saints is used. Daniel was not a Christian. Nor was Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Nor was David, Sarah, you name them. Christians? No. But they were saints. They were set apart. They were sanctified by the presence of God in their lives. And as a result of being one of those, or as the New Testament calls them, the elect. The elect. Those who are set apart. Those who are distinguished. The saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. It doesn't matter who the beast is, because he's going down. Think about that. And it's good to be on the winning team. But being on the winning team encompasses more than just knowledge. It encompasses more than that. Well, verse 19, Daniel's attention to the fourth beast is turned. He turns his attention to the fourth beast now, and it has power to subjugate even the saints, as we can read here. Verse 19 says, then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron, his nails of brass, which devour, break in pieces, and stamp the residue with his feet. Interesting, all this talk about feet. What is the distinguishing quality of the Roman Empire? Was its legion of soldiers, who were massive in numbers, who spread out over the entire globe, or the known world of that day. They certainly weren't over here yet, in America. They didn't mess with the Chinese. The Chinese were around in these days. You know, nobody was messing with the Chinese, even then. So Marco Polo in the, I think, the 12th or 13th century began to do some moving over there, and he brought back spaghetti from China. Spaghetti from China. That's where it came from. Noodles. He also brought back gunpowder. The Chinese had it already. Maybe that's why nobody was messing with the Chinese, when you think about it. Yeah, the Chinese are significant people. And so let's not fool ourselves and just dismiss them so easily. And that's an important point to remember. But that's just an aside. So here we've got these Daniel wanting to deal with this fourth beast. Verse 20, and the 10 horns that were on his head, he's getting the interpretation now, of the others which came up, and before whom three fell, and I've already talked about Charlemagne and all of that, even on that horn that had eyes and had a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. In other words, they bowed to his wishes. He was a significant player. I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them. When we go back through Christian history, we find an interesting thing happening. From the time, actually prior to Constantine, but certainly at that point of the 4th century, 325 AD, we have the Roman government now comprised of the Roman Church, or in complicity with the Roman Church. A marriage, if you will, whereby its influence would be experienced or felt throughout the entire of Christendom. And there were individuals within Christendom who did not go along with the party line. And war was made against them. And the saints could not prevail against that power. And so, it's a mystery how Sunday worship came to be, except that the Romans had the power to enforce it. And those who were Sabbatarians in the quarter deciman controversy and all those kinds of things, they became less known. They became obscure. And so war was made. There were people who were probably burned at the stake, who were tortured in all kinds of ways through the ages, and having the Roman influence, especially through the revivals of the Roman Empire, who were just killed because they had no strength and no power. And war was made with the saints. We are blessed today to be able to be here and not have war made against us, but that could change. That could change. And we'd have to put into practice that which we believe. It says in verse 22 then, the war against the saints prevailed until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High. Oh, what do we learn here? Oh, this is interesting now, because chapter 7 reveals the Ancient of Days, the Father. It reveals the Son of Man, Jesus Christ. But it also reveals that there are saints who are judges. Are you with me? Here comes the judge. The judge gives authority to the Son, who then distributes that responsibility to saints who also render judgment. Look at it. And judgment was given to the saints of the Most High. And the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus he said, giving the interpretation, the angel is giving this interpretation to Daniel, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. I think back in my history to how the church at Rome had such power. Decrees could be issued. They were called papal bulls. You know how Spanish is spoken in the part of the world from Brazil to the West. You know how that happened? A pope gave a decision and divided the world between the Spanish and the Portuguese. The Spanish got everything to the west. That's why they speak Portuguese in Brazil and every place else in South America. They speak what? Spanish. That's how it happened. How do the Indians or the natives in this part of the world speak Spanish? Because of the domination of the authority that came from Rome. That's how it happened. So we bear in mind about the dividing and the breaking in pieces and treading down. It happened. Verse 24, and the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall rise with them. This is referencing verses 8 and 20 about the little horn. This little horn shall arise, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings. And he, this little horn, shall speak great words against the Most High, and the Most High, and wear out the saints of the Most High. Yes, ask Christians today, are you tired? Are you weary? Are you worn out? Yeah. They are. We are. Because of the war that's made against us, sometimes externally, but most times internally, to change times and laws. I already talked about the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD, to change times and laws. That has prevailed over time. And they shall be given unto his hand until a time and times and the dividing of times. A period of time that is synonymous with 3.5 years, but whenever that period of time begins, we'll know that the end is near. Verse 26, but the judgment shall sit, that is, it will continue, and they, who is that? Well, that's referring to verse 22 that talks about judgment was given to the saints. And they shall take away his, that fourth beast's, dominion, to consume and to destroy them to the end. Verse 27, and the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints. What's important to know about the four beasts is that they're going down, and that there will be saints who will prevail. The question is, are you one? Because this kingdom of the Most High is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Hitherto is the end of the matter, Daniel says. Boy, aren't you grateful for Daniel? Aren't you glad Daniel had this vision and wrote it down for us? And as we wrestle inside the vision and figure out, well, let's see, there's this Roman Empire, and then there was the Greeks, and then there was all these things, and this fourth beast had these 10 horns, and we got to kind of figure out, you know, about Charlemagne and figure out all of that. But the most important thing we try to figure out is about that last horn. You know, who is it? Some people say it's the Arabs. Some people say it's the Germans. Some people even kind of wondering, maybe it's from the Far East. Some people even suggest it's America. Who is it? Who is the fourth beast? You want me to tell you? I don't know. I already told you, I don't care. But what I care about is that if I can be among the saints in the protection of God, then I'm all right. Then I'm going to reign and rule with him. In conclusion, 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 3, I'll just refer to it in passing because I want to get to Revelation. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 3 just says, do you not know that the saints will judge the angels? Oh yeah, the judge is coming, and we can be with the judge. But in Revelation, the second chapter, just a quick reference to these summations that come in the presentation of the seven churches. Here's what's said about this church in Revelation 2. Verse 26 says, and he that overcomes and keeps my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron, as the vessels of the potter shall they be broken to shivers, even as I received of my Father. Oh, that's a promise to the saints. Chapter 3, verse 21, to assure ourselves. Here's what Jesus Christ says to the churches. To him who will come, will I grant to sit with me in my throne, a sign of rulership, a sign of judgment, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. We have a description in Daniel 7 of the Son of Man coming before the Ancient of Days, and judgment and authority and dominion and power was given to him, and he turns around and shares it with his brothers and sisters, of which we can be as saints. Well, I hope that gives us pause to think as we continue our exercise in discerning, here comes the judge. Next time, part 8, as we get into, let's see, this the ram, I'm back in the book of Revelation. Think of the ram and the other vision that Daniel had at a different time, I think during the Persian Empire, but we'll get into that next time.